You too? Yes, me too. Hi, I'm Liz, the host of You Too. We all have a story, and sometimes a single story can remind us that we're never truly alone. Here, those stories find a voice to inspire and remind us of that simple truth. Join us each week for a new story on You Too, powered by U-Turn Health. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of You Too. April is Second Chance Month, and we can't think of a better way to recognize this special month by highlighting the work of Augie. Once incarcerated himself, Augie made the most of his experience by using his time in prison to help others. He has spoken about his ethical failures at high schools, colleges, and businesses for almost a decade as part of a community outreach program. He has also developed a series of employment readiness, financial literacy, life skills, and barriers to reentry courses that he taught to fellow inmates. When he was released, he turned his passion into a second career, empowering those dealing with incarceration, addiction, trauma, loss, and other life-changing events to break the chains of the past and create a positive new future. Working with U-Turn Health and Second Opportunity, Augie brings support and hope to those getting back into life. His podcast, which we are featuring today on You Too, is worth a listen. We hope you enjoy this episode as much as we did.
Welcome to the Path Forward podcast. I'm your host, Augie Ghilarducci, and what we're doing today is presenting to you episode number 7 of our series. And my guest today is Justin Knapp. And the story behind this is that we did a webinar about advanced skills and in trying to entice employers and what have you to hire people with backgrounds. And somebody attended our webinar that's actually in the field of helping people get jobs. And so he had appeared with us and he wanted to bring somebody from his team. And about 30 seconds into Justin's presentation, I said to our producer, Monica, that this is somebody we've got to get on our podcast. So he's got a great story. I've had time to visit with him a little bit, some phone conversations. He's a really terrific young man. So Justin Knapp, welcome to the Path Forward podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So what I'd like to start with is, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, your background, where you grew up, what you might have done when you're in your youth, that type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is, I'd like to say, very relatable to a lot of the individuals that have been incarcerated. So my mother had me at a very young age, single mom, teenager. My father was actually incarcerated at the time of my birth. So, you know, absent father. I was a little bit of a rebellious kid as a result of these factors that I mentioned, but I had a great loving mother. I did play sports. I played soccer. I played football, had a very good relationship with my brother. Eventually, you know, because of the single mother factor, because of the absent father, I did tend to find some, you know, male companionship. In the wrong places. I grew up, outside of Chicago. And the individuals that I befriended, were involved in some criminal activity. This inevitably ended me down, you know, the wrong path, so to speak. I did end up in juvenile detention centers in my youth. I believe the first time that I went to the Juvenile Department of Corrections, I was about 13 years old. And unfortunately, I spent about 2 months there. And when I did come home, I wish that I could say that I had learned my lesson, but I did not. And I ended up actually going back to the Juvenile Department of Corrections again at about the age of 16.
And was this was all in the state of Illinois?
Yes, this was.
Okay.
Yes, this was.
Okay.
So when I was released after the second time as a juvenile, I was in a situation where I kind of felt outcasted. I missed a lot of school, didn't have many healthy relationships with my peers in school. I was forced to get my GED when I was in the Juvenile Department of Corrections, so I couldn't go back to high school.
Oh, so you were taking GED courses, yes. Which then meant you couldn't go back exactly. Into traditional high school.
Absolutely.
Can I ask, did you continue your GED when you got outside of the juvenile department, or did you achieve it?
I actually achieved it while I was in there. Therefore, when I did come home, I couldn't go back to high school. I mean, I already had a GED, right? Yeah. And frankly, they didn't want to take me back, even if I did want to get the actual high school diploma. So I did end up, as a result of that, just continuing to involve myself, with these, so-called friends. Obviously, looking back on them, these weren't actual substantial friendships. They were friendships built off of thinking distortions and, things of that nature. But I did end up, at the age of 18. Again, unfortunately and regretfully, I was actually involved in a violent crime. And I was charged with attempted first degree murder, convicted of that, class X felony at the age of 18. And I was sentenced to 16 years, in prison, which was a serious blow. It was shocking, to think that I had to essentially serve just as much time as I've been alive.
Yes.
In prison. And I think that's where my story really started to make a serious shift right there.
So we had a chance to talk before we started doing this episode. And I mentioned to you that I think the reason that you're such a terrific guest to be on this is because, frankly, because of your age and the age with which you went into the system. And I went into the system at age 45. And so it's a different point in my life than when you're 18 or 19 years old, that type of thing. Obviously it must have had a profound impact on you, because I think that our social skills really start to mature when we get into our 20s.
Yeah.
And if the only place to refine your social skills is on the inside of a prison, it makes it exceptionally challenging. But can we spend a few minutes? I'd like to talk about, you know, the phrase, how you did your time, what you did to, you know, either good or bad, to keep yourself occupied and to expand so that you come out the man you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll talk about that. So to be completely transparent, when I was sentenced to 16 years at the age of 18, it was a very quick process to get me into prison. They got me in there immediately. And my mind, regretfully, was not in a place where I said, you know, I want to change my life. At that time, after everything I've been through, I was, like most of the incarcerated individuals that have gone through similar experiences, I was angry. I was bitter. Mm-hmm. I was upset. I was rebellious. You know, thinking about my parole date or my release date was not even a factor, because I'm a teenager and that date is in my 30s. That's nothing to think about, right? So in the early stages of my incarceration, I was involved with people that were not even concerned in any way, shape, or form about bettering their lives. You know, I did spend a lot of time in segregation for fighting. I did have just a negative attitude, regretfully. And I thought that because of everything that I've been through, there was no point in me trying to quote unquote better myself, because with everything on my record, you know, what opportunities do I even have?
So it's interesting. We had a previous guest on the podcast, Dr. Chico Tillman, he's a terrific guy, but he talks about when he went away, he was involved in all the wrong things and wasn't thinking about the future. And his moment where he got some clarity on his life is when his mother told him during a visit while he was in segregation that, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. I love you. And when I can, I'll put some money on your books, but I can't go through the ups and downs of this. Did you have anything like that happen?
Yeah. And it's actually ironic that you mentioned that is his shifting point, if you will. Because as I said, I did spend a substantial amount of time, you know, in segregation for fighting. But my mother has always been extremely loving. She has been a rock for me, right? She's very supportive. And she would come visit me every time. every month, never missed a visit, regardless if I was in segregation or not. And just like this individual that you mentioned, story, you know, it reached a point where I was in my early 20s and I just could not bear the toll that I can see that my mother was going through. Seeing her look at me through a glass with reinforced with metal, seeing me shackled by my hands and feet to a metal stool, unkept, unshaved, hair messy, looking dirty, quite frankly, just looking pathetic in my eyes. And it just, in my mind, it must have been tormenting and torturous for a mother to see her son, any mother, to see their son in that state, yeah. Seeing her cry and me just reflecting on the fact that I'm her oldest son and this is who she created, or at least in her mind, thinking that this is what I've led my son to be. And in that moment was my serious mental shift to where I did not want my mother to look back on her life and remember me as this individual that she's looking at right now. In addition to that, I have a little brother that would come with her. And I actually have 7 little brothers in total. So thinking about how I never had a positive male role model in my life,
right.
Thinking about how my father was incarcerated. And actually, I didn't even mention that my grandfather before him was incarcerated for murder. I wanted to just be the positive role model that I never had for them. So I just was overcome with a sense of duty and responsibility to my mother and to my little brothers that I'm going to come home the best version of myself. I'm not going to come home who I am now or worse. And that was my serious turning point. And I think everything in my life changed from that day on.
So thank you for sharing that, first of all. I mean, I know those types of experiences are painful. I went through those same things, right? Yeah. So now you've got this different attitude, right? It's starting on the inside. It always starts on the inside. Oh, yeah. You've got this different attitude about how you're going to conduct yourself. And so, and we've never talked about this. We've just so everybody knows, we just met. So you're hearing this the first time that I'm hearing this. But what were some of the things that you started to do in this process of transforming yourself to be a role model for your brothers and a good son for your mother and that type of thing? What were some of the things you did on the inside? And just so you were in the Illinois Department of Corrections.
Yes, I was in Illinois. Yes.
Okay. So what did you start to do on the inside?
So once that mental shift happened, I wasted no time. I was ambitious. I was driven, and I would pick up any book, right? I thought to myself, well, what sources of knowledge and wisdom do I have? It's not in most of these guys around me, right? I made that mistake my whole life, right? So I thought to myself, well, where can I find this wisdom? What can guide me? So I picked up every book that I could, whether it was a book about philosophy, you know, it could have been Aristotle. It could have been Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching. I did not limit myself in terms of diversity of what I wanted to read. In addition to philosophy, mindfulness, even studied comparative religion. I mean, I would just read the dictionary and read the thesaurus and find other ways to describe certain things because I wanted to be better. Eventually, I said, well, I have to go to school. I have the opportunity here to take advantage of a free education. And in my mind, I told myself I would be a fool not to take advantage of a free credential to substantiate that I'm an educated individual when I come home. So I signed up for school. And one of the obstacles there was that, well, I had so much time that they said, well, you know, these short timers, they actually get priority because they accumulate good time. I didn't get good time, right? So I had to kind of take classes every few months here and there as I could. But I stayed consistent. I didn't let that motivation that I had and that drive that I had, I didn't let that dwindle away. So I was always simultaneously in some sort of college class while I was reading other subject matter to just expand my wisdom and my knowledge about everything that I could get my hands on. And I was also afforded eventually, I would say by the age of 29, give or take, the Department of Corrections was getting a little more forward thinking in terms of, you know, taking advantage of cognitive behavioral therapy, re-entry related subject matter to prepare the individuals that are incarcerated for their transition home. So I was actually, as a result of everything that I've been doing and the shift in my entire quality of life, I was invited to participate in a reentry program at Illinois River Correctional Center. And during this program, I was able to participate and help facilitate things like cognitive behavioral therapy, conflict resolution, mindfulness, anger management, tutoring individuals that were in the GED program, tutoring individuals that needed help in their college classes. So I became someone that was able to be a positive example to the other incarcerated individuals. And this was really motivating and rewarding because, as I said, this is what I wanted to be for my little brothers, right? I wanted to be that positive role model.
So that's terrific. I mean, it's really, when you decided that you were going to make the shift, you jumped in, you know, all the way up to your eyeball.
Full fledged, yeah. Absolutely.
And so what's interesting about that is that even on the inside, you're paying it forward, right? You're helping people that with their GED or whatever it might be.
Absolutely.
And I think that because I was involved doing some tutoring as well, there's some internal satisfaction that comes with that. It you know, while it may have been helping the person that I was tutoring, it was helping me more because it was making me feel like I was doing something meaningful and that type of thing. So, you know, I would say, and second opportunity, that's what we do is provide reentry programming. If we're not in your facility, we certainly want to be. But the way that I see it is that when we get committed into a program or that type of mode, that, you know, learning is contagious.
Oh, yeah.
It's first internally, you take a class, you get a certificate, you feel good about yourself, you want to immediately take another one. But it also reflects on our cellmates or people that see us, that we're walking around with a book, we're involved in things. And they, hey, what's that about? Because everybody wants to know what's going on, right?
Yeah.
And so how would you sign up for that? How'd you get into that program? So I think that there's a lot of positive that comes with that. But I'll also say that it doesn't come knocking on our cell door and say, hey, we're inviting you to come with us. It's one of those things that we had to seek out. And this is about you, but I'll share a real quick story. I had to chase down the supervisor of education for probably 3 months. He'd always tell me to meet him someplace. He'd never be there. And then I'd find him the next day or 2 days later. And the thing continued. All I wanted to do is teach a course.
Yeah.
And finally, he allowed for that to happen. And then I spent the rest of my time teaching courses. So sometimes we got to make this stuff happen, right? They're not going to come and invite us to it. But when we as somebody on the inside are doing it and others see it, I think there's a real benefit that comes to that.
Oh, absolutely. People definitely recognize the difference in the aura around you when you're in an environment such as prison, but you are participating in positive things. People notice that, like you said, even to the extent where the staff actually noticed some of the things that I was doing. And I would have never thought that I would be in a position where I ended up before I did end up getting released. But I was actually afforded with the opportunity to work for the facility, for the prison.
Yeah.
And what this opportunity was to work with the major, who was a title right under the warden, and work for the assistant warden as somewhat of an administrative assistant. And I would have never thought that this was even practical for a inmate to be an administrative assistant for a warden. But, you know, I told myself that I wasn't going to say no to opportunities, even if I didn't know if that opportunity was going to result in something good. Opening doors, stepping through the threshold, and seeing what other opportunities can come to be are an important part of life. So I actually said yes to this position. I was given my own office next to the warden's office in the facility. I was essentially vetting and auditing documentation and paperwork. It was a serious responsibility in terms of, you know, managing certain things like roll call, very interesting, unique experience, to think that, you know, the kid that I was, that was constantly fighting and segregation, seeing my past and what I've been through. And now, you know, I'm coming home in a year and I'm completely different human being. I'm working for the warden. I have an education. That was really motivating. So I think it's important, for people that are still incarcerated to take advantage of every single opportunity that's afforded to them. Open the door, step through it. Don't be scared to say no. I've never had a real job. Yep. I was scared to say yes to that job. I had self-confidence, but I was apprehensive. Well, what if I don't do a good job? What if I fail? But we can't fear that. I mean, that's what courage is. It's seeing the fear and it's moving forward.
You know, you raise a really good point. And I would say that, you know, based on my experience and what I've gone through, that the it is important that we take advantage of things on the inside because they do translate to the outside. I mean, I don't need to tell you, you've now moved away from that, but when a potential employer hears that you did what you just told us in a few minutes here, they're going to see something in you to say that this is somebody that I want to be a part of their story, their comeback story. And I, you know, that's what I try to encourage. We're on the inside all the time. And that's what I try to encourage is that, you know, if the person that owns a restaurant needs a cook and somebody's been excelling in the kitchen inside a prison, serving 900 lunches every day,
right,
they're not going to care where you learned how to serve 900 lunches. What they're going to care about is that you're the most qualified person for the position. Right?
Absolutely.
And so if we can just kind of leave that or state that as a source of encouragement to say there are some opportunities out there that, you know, while you're on the inside that you might be able to take advantage of. So take us through the point now where you said you're in your 30s, so I know you're getting close to release.
Yeah.
So the release and then what happened upon release and how did that lead to the path that you're on right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was inevitably released at the age of 32 after serving 14 of those 16 years, went to my mother's house, paroled there, and was mentally prepared and driven to tap into my fullest potential. Right. In my mind, I was ready. Nothing can stop me. I am motivated. And boy, was I mistaken how difficult that transition period was going to be. Talk about culture shock. Mind you, I was 18 years old. I'm in my 30s now. The world is different. Technology is different. People are different. So there was a lot of external stimuli that were really affecting my ability to navigate the world, right? And I really empathize with the individuals that are coming home because, I mean, if you need to go get your state ID, I don't have an ID. Well, I need an Uber there, right? Well, when I try to set up this app, which is very foreign to me, it asks, well, we need a copy of your ID. Okay, so I need an ID to go get my ID. Yeah. So there are a lot of struggles that can seem like very simple things from the outside looking in, but it was a difficult experience just coming up with the fundamental requirements to substantiate my identity, to get my social security card, and to just move forward. That was an interesting experience in itself. Eventually, thanks to my mother, she referred me to what is called an American Job Center. And these are scattered throughout the United States, every state, almost every county. And what this American Job Center does is it affords opportunities for the justice impacted, not limited to, but including the justice impacted, opportunities for Pell funds to pay for occupational skills training, to get some sort of an industry recognized credential, whether it's a college degree, whether it's a vocational certificate, and prepare these individuals for employment. Because employment is such an essential piece of reducing this recidivism, right? So I told myself, honestly, I said, you know, I don't know if I want to do this, but I trust my mother's judgment and I believe in my philosophy of saying yes to opportunities to at least see what could be the outcome, right? So I did say yes to this opportunity. I went to the American Job Center in my local area and I met with the staff there. They interviewed me, I believe, twice, right? They told me I was eligible for their services, and they explained to me what they do in terms of providing the funding for training, providing internships to gain some work experience, especially for those like myself that have never really had real jobs. So how do you apply for a job if you don't have a resume? So they will help you with these internships to put things on resumes, get you some skills, some experience, and prep you to apply for a real job. Well, after the staff at the American Job Center met me a few times, they contacted me and they said, hey, you know what? I know we explained to you that generally we'll, you know, pay for your education, help you get a job, but there's something interesting about you. And we would really love for you to actually be an intern here at our facility, working specifically with our justice impacted individuals, whether those individuals are on parole, probation, what be it. But from a relatable experience, they said, you know, it would be great for you to meet with these individuals and tell them about your experience, motivate them and help them navigate through whatever obstacles they need to navigate through. And I said, you know what? Absolutely. Why not? You know, I mean, I've always wanted to be a role model. I always wanted to take my negative experiences of my past and channel them into a positive direction. You know, that's the crux of post-traumatic growth. You know, everything that I've been through, it wasn't for nothing. It was a catalyst that had led to something greater. So I wanted to take advantage of that opportunity. So I was an intern working for a government office, which was very interesting. And I noticed that, you know, I loved this. I loved making a positive impact on individuals that have been incarcerated because I empathize with them and I know the experience. Now, this internship was contractually obligated to end at a certain amount of hours. Once those hours ended, I wondered, what am I going to do? Right. And I believe that I only had maybe a handful. I'm talking maybe a week of work left. And I just so happened to notice that one of the individuals that worked at this facility was actually going to leave. This individual put their 2 weeks in. And I said, man, should I apply for that job? And I did have some intrusive thoughts, like most of us do that have been incarcerated. This government office is going to hire me. I have a class X attempted murder on my background. You know, no matter how good I just did in this internship, what government entity is going to hire? I thought about it. And I said, you know what? What's the worst they can do? The worst they could do is say no.
Right.
Right. Yep. So I ended up actually drafting up a nice resume using only the skills and experiences that I accumulated in this work experience, this paid internship, put them on a resume, and I submitted an application. I was shocked, and just amazed that the director of this workforce development department came to speak to me personally. And he said, hey, I noticed you put an application. You really want this job? And I said, absolutely. This title was for a career planner. And what the career planners do is they help the individuals in the program do exactly what I said. They help them get training. They help them get credentials and they help them get a job, right? Well, I was actually afforded the opportunity. The director said, well, I'll give you an interview. I can't promise you anything, but I'll give you an interview. I said, okay, they set up a date for me to interview. I go in there dressed to impress, right? You have to look the part, right? If you want to be something, you have to embody that. So I dressed up, put my best on. I went in there to interview and I see individuals, that are very professional, much older than me, probably more experienced than me, definitely have better credentials in terms of, you know, I have an associate's degree at this time. I don't have a bachelor's. I don't have a master's. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to be my authentic self. So I interviewed after these other individuals. And it was the next day that I was called into the director's office. And he said, you know what? The other individuals that I interviewed for this position, some of them had masters, some of them had bachelor's degrees. But there's something about the way that you present yourself. There's something about your authenticity. There's something about your passion for this line of work, especially dealing with the justice impacted. And he said, you know, I think that you are a walking emulation of what we wish that most of these justice impacted individuals can be. He said, so, you know, the government HR advised me not to hire you because you are what they consider a risk because of your felony. But I'm the hiring manager. I'm the director here and I want to offer you the job. He gave me an offer letter for a salary as a career planner working for the government, dealing with federal and state Pell funds, and to channel those funds into the justice-impacted individuals. And needless to say, I said yes. And that's where I am today. So I have been for almost 2 years now working as a career planner, case manager, specifically working with individuals that are on parole or that have been released from parole, working with individuals that are on probation. And my sole responsibility is to get them to identify their skills, their strengths, their aptitude, and channel whatever we can into providing them with the service that they need to get them into their target occupation, into their career goal. So that's what I do today. It's an honor to have been afforded the opportunity to take my life's hardships and be able to use those as a mechanism to help other people, that have been where I've been.
So those of you watching, that's why that right there is why I thought this is somebody that we want to talk to. He walked into a American Job Center to have them help him get a job and then up hiring him into a career that he seems to be he is absolutely passionate about. So a lot of lessons can be taken from that. And on the inside, I hope that this brings some inspiration to say that we can do things on the inside to prepare us. And maybe in the moment we're doing them, maybe in the moment that you're reading the thesaurus or that you're reading a book that it was the only one you could get your hands on, maybe it doesn't seem like it fits into the big picture, but somehow, some way it does. So we're about to wrap up, but what I'd like to do is tell you that we've got many people that are watching this. We're on tablets and jails and prisons around the country. So can you just take a couple of minutes and just kind of share a message about how you can take a situation as a very young man, age 18, going to prison for a long period of time, and get that, and somehow bring something out of that that has you right now doing things that probably didn't even imagine would be possible.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm passionate about. So my message and the big takeaway from this that I hope that everyone listening could really grasp is that your past does not have to define you. If you listen to my story, I was a kid that had no father. I was a kid that was raised in the streets. I was a kid that was in and out of the justice system from a young age. You know, I was in my mind dealt a hard break at life. And it seemed like I would never be capable at one point in time. It seemed like I would never be capable of doing anything other than what I was limited to do. But that is not the truth. And I'm a walking emulation of that. You have to want it. You have to want the change. But if you do, it's possible. And you can tap into your greatest potential and be the greatest version of yourself. And your past does not have to define you. Everything that you have been through does not have to define you, but rather be a catalyst to lead to something greater. And that's a message to the individuals that are incarcerated and to their family, their loved ones. Even if it seems like these individuals are never going to change, my mom thought I was never going to change. Right? But it can happen. And I would say that what you really need to do is just believe in yourself. It starts in the mind. Yep. And everything takes place from there. So.